In the Gospel of John that we just heard, chapter 10, verses 17 to 18, John says that Jesus said an extraordinary thing. On account of this, the Father loves me, because I laid down my life in order that I might take it up again. No one can take it from me, but I laid it down by myself. I have authority to lay it down, and I have authority to take it up again. I took this order from my Father. His life is his own. Nobody can take it from him. And the Gospel of John wants to say the same thing to you. That's why it begins in chapter 1. He came to his own home, and his own home received him not. But as many as received him, to them he gave authority to become the children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. So that our basic relationship is not horizontal, influenced by the things around us, but it is a vertical relationship. That's why we use incense, to remind ourselves that we have this basic relationship, recipients as we are of heavenly power, beyond ourselves but within us. And so the Gospel of John takes off. Chapter 2, Philip gets Nathanael. He says, "We have found the Messiah." Nathanael says, "What good thing can come out of Bethlehem?" "Come and see," Philip says. And as Nathanael makes his way to see Jesus, Jesus sees him first and says, "Ah, there's an Israelite in whom there is no deceit." And Nathanael says, "How do you know me?" And Jesus said, "Before you were under the fig tree, I saw you." And Nathanael says, "You are the King of Israel." And Jesus says, "Do you believe because I said I knew you? You're going to see greater things than these. You're going to see heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man." This vertical relationship. And it goes on in the Gospel of John, chapter 2. There's a wedding in Cana. Do they have tasteless water? No, it's turned into zesty wine. In chapter 3, an old man, a leader of the Jews, Nicodemus by name, comes to Jesus by stealth at night. And Jesus says he's got to be born anew. He says, "How can I, an old man, go back into my mother's womb and come out again?" No. "You've got to be born by water and the Spirit. It's possible for you, Nicodemus. You, no matter where you've been, what you've done, what you thought or said, you can start again." Chapter 4, the Samaritan woman at the well. She's been coming there daily, carrying her big ceramic jugs to draw water, and he sits there by Jacob's well, and he promises her living water. She says, "Give me that water to drink. There's something better than what you've been doing in your life." Chapter 5, a man 38 years crippled, lying in a pool at Bethesda. He says he's there because there's no one to help him. He's full of complaints. I'd get out of here, but if I just, no one will ever help me. So I've been here for 38 years, fiddling along just as I was. And Jesus comes along and says, "Do you want to be healed?" "Oh, there's no one to help me." And Jesus says, I'm going to give it to you in the Greek text. He says, "Agairi aronton kramaton kai peripatai." "Get up and walk!" called tough love. Chapter 6, like Moses, they expect just a little manna in the desert. You know, the Hebrew word manna means, what is it? It's like that, you know, that meat in the lunch line when you were in college. What is it? What is it? No, no. You get to eat bread from heaven that will give you eternal life. Chapter 9, a man born blind from birth. Who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Nobody sinned. This, like everything else in life, is a place where the glory of God can be manifest to us. And those who think they see are guilty. They don't see. And those who will admit they are blind to what is going on, they get to see. And chapter 11, Lazarus, 4 days in the tomb, he stinketh. And Jesus calls him forth from the tomb. He comes forth all wrapped up in his burial bandages. And Jesus says, unbind him and let him go. This authority to take up your life, to put it down, to take it up, is not just given to him. It's been given to all of us. All of us. And so we come to chapter 14. And he says an extraordinary thing. Truly, truly, I tell you, he who believes in me can do the very works that I do and do even better works than these. Wow. Jesus, who just revealed himself to Nathanael and turned water into wine at Cana and gave old Nicodemus the chance to start again, and who got that guy at the Bethesda pool to walk, and who gave living bread from heaven and sight to the man blind from birth, and even brought Lazarus out of the tomb, says to us, you think that's hot shot stuff? I tell you truly, if you believe in me, you will do even greater works than these, because I am going to the Father, from which place I'm going to pour on you my Spirit. And above all, like me, you can be a good shepherd. Doesn't really mean good as in the sense of moral rectitude. This Greek word kalos means it's about aesthetic goodness. It means you have the possibility of being a beautiful shepherd, a gorgeous shepherd, a nice shepherd, and a lovely shepherd, a really attractive shepherd. Not just Sean and Erica or Charles, but every one of you has the possibility, is called to be an attractive, lovely, gorgeous shepherd. Because your life is your own, you can take it up and lay it down. And when you lay it down at that moment, it looks very beautiful. Let me tell you about some of the people I've known who've done that. You know, I was a parish priest on the California desert for 19 years outside of Los Angeles. One of my close friends in that town was Sam Maloof, the famous American furniture maker, whose work is now in the American Folk Art Museum in New York. Sam Alouf came to this country from Lebanon as an immigrant. He wanted to be a painter in Chino, California, and he couldn't make a living as a painter, so he started making furniture. And he went from poverty to riches. He won a Marshall Fellowship. He got a great deal of money. His rocking chairs went from $200 to $800 to $1,500 to $25,000. And yet Sam Alouf never forgot the little United Church of the Brethren Church in a barrio, a Mexican barrio in Ontario, California. His whole life until his death, he went there every Sunday. He gave his wealth, his time, his energy to those people. It wasn't a fancy church, a little tiny brick building on an insignificant corner. He loved those people. Or I think about Betty Potts, who is a member of our vestry up at Emmanuel Resurrection Church in Holmesburg on Torsdale Avenue in the great northeast of the city. You know, Betty was a beauty queen when she was 20. She was Miss Philadelphia. And she married a dentist, and I imagine she has far more means than most of the people in that church. And it's one of those places where I go constantly because they don't get along with each other too well. And whenever I'm there and there's some problem, Betty, who is always there, with great sympathy, empathy, says, "Well, Bishop, you know, you've got to understand these people. They really, deep down inside, have a lot of love in their hearts." Or I think about Rob O'Neill, who's now the Episcopal Bishop in the Diocese of Colorado, but I knew him best when he was the rector of the Church of the Epiphany in Winchester, Massachusetts. One Lent, I gave 5 Sunday morning lectures in that parish, and then I would go to the late service like all of you are here, and I'd worship. It was an amazing church, and at the end of it, I said to Rob, and I said, "You know, Rob, this is really a wonderful parish." Without batting an eye, he said, "Yes, we have been through a lot of pain together." Those are people, it seems to me, who understood that their lives are their own, that they can lay them down and take them up, and they're willing to lay them down for others. And you have those kind of people here. I think about Kent John Pope. I don't think I've ever been to St. Mark's. I've been here many times. But what he hasn't been here, getting ready for the glorious worship that is your heritage in this parish and a mark of this parish in this city. Or I think about Audrey Evans back there, great doctor that she is, how much she loves this church and all she's done to found St. James School and lead you to the magnificent outreach you've done in Honduras and through the Church of the Crucifixion and through your soup kitchen and your food program, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. These are people who I think understand what it means to say, "You know, I've got this one life to live. I can take it up and I can lay it down. I'm going to lay it down for others." I sing a song of the saints of God. I sing a song of the saints of God, faithful and brave and true, who toiled and fought and lived and died for the Lord they loved and knew. And one was a soldier and one was a priest and one was slain by a fierce wild beast. And there's not any reason, no, not the least, why I shouldn't be one.